Blog Talk Radio.
Edition of the Don and Ron program. Coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. I'm your co-host, Ron Edwards. My associate, Mr. Allen, as we first reported last week, will be gone for the entire month of January. He is on an academic assignment, if you will, and we hope to have him rejoin us, the first Wednesday of February. This is MLK month, Martin Luther King Jr., and of course the month of February is designated as Black History Month, and so it is important that we stay on top of and share with our audiences, both domestically and internationally, those Pacific circumstances, pieces, parts of history, and et cetera, that keep us awake, if you will, keeps us knowledgeable about the excellent but yet sometimes troubling history of the sons and daughters of the African. Tonight, we are going to have to take a look at education. The front page of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, who itself is divided or was divided over the issue of the appointment that actually was made back on the 7th of December. The Minneapolis Board of Education, Special School District Number 1, announced that it had selected a gentleman who had previously been a superintendent in a small Massachusetts city, of Holyoke, if you will, to be the next superintendent of the 35,000 student district here in the city of Minneapolis. In the previous jurisdiction that Sergio Paz had been superintendent, the number of students was 5,000, and so consequently he was looking at a much larger number, displacement, if you will, of students, and certainly a much, much larger budget, and certainly a greater number of facilities, employees, and et cetera. Last night, after what it appeared to have been a investigation by the Minneapolis Board of Education of allegations that emerged around the 11th of December 2015, which spoke to rather serious charges and allegations of abuse of children in the school system there in that western Massachusetts city, a small city, if you will. Apparently, the leader, if you will, agency, was the Massachusetts Disabilities Law Center, which, according to many sources, as we first talked about on last week's program, prepared, after extensive research, investigation, et cetera, a rather troubling report and allegations and et cetera that actually caught the attention of the local district attorney there in that city of Holyoke, and was and did lead and was leading and still is a criminal investigation. As we raised in our column in the December 14th edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, that these were dangerous indicators. These were significant red flags that had to be addressed, that the board may have been premature at best, if you will, in making an offer to Sergio, particularly in light of what had now turned into a criminal investigation by the chief prosecutor in that particular city of criminal activities and et cetera. And so there's been much give and take. Opinions had been formed, if you will. As we said earlier at the top of this program, the Star Tribune was a divided camp. In mid-December, the Star Tribune's board of editors, or editorial board, as it's sometimes referred to, wrote an editorial in which it indicated that allegations and et cetera had been brought forward, and it may be in the best interest of the Minneapolis School District leadership to reopen the process, if you will. If you remember, there were three finalists, though the Star Tribune this morning indicated there were only two people that were left. Of course, that was not correct. There was an African-American educator from Houston, Texas, who was the third finalist, if you will. When the Star Tribune wrote that editorial almost a month ago now, it was a month ago, it certainly displayed that there was internal strife inside Star Tribune, that the editors of the editorial board had a different vision, if you will, different concerns than that was being written by writers, staff writers, if you will, at the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Now, there is a significant amount of puzzlement, and certainly there's enough blame to go around, so it's not a question that someone has to go through the stack, if you will, or peel back the onion, if you will. The Star Tribune's reporters, general reporters and et cetera, who cover education in the Minneapolis Public School District, did a terrible job of investigating, examining, if you will, the portfolio that Sergio Paz was bringing to his position of authority, leadership, and responsibility in the Minneapolis Public School System. I am still, as a journalist, puzzled by why the Star Tribune, who had significant time all during the summer of 2015, a significant amount of time, certainly have the resources, assets, and et cetera, as a major newspaper in the United States, to have done a little better job, because upon further examination in this particular chair, if you will, if we were able to ascertain information from sources in Massachusetts and et cetera that raised a lot of red flags after the Massachusetts Disabilities Law Center published their findings, then you would have thought that a paper, Minneapolis Star Tribune, which had been following this ever since they had played a significant role in encouraging the departure of the African-American superintendent, Bernadette Johnson, in early 2015 and even late 2014, one would have thought that when the search firm, who absolutely took money under false pretenses, you know, really the school district's board should ask for their money back, because that search firm, according to copyrighted stories, notice we said copyrighted stories in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, indicated that the search firm had done a significant and well appreciated and extremely proficient job of examining all the candidates and et cetera. In fact, you remember how the process began to wind down this past summer. Six finalists were identified. It was rather interesting. Two Caucasians, two Latinos, if you will, and the two African Americans, though Mr. Gore, who was the interim superintendent, still is the interim superintendent after last night, is of mixed race, African American, as he has said it, and Asian, if you will, Korean, as we understand it, based on his bio, if you will, and information that has been developed and identified over the last year and a half as he has moved into position, if you will. He has Mr. Gore had interim superintendent Gore had a history of activity in the Minneapolis School District, later went to Memphis, and later was in the Boston school system, if you will, as a top administrator. And so one would have assumed that there would have been a gathering of all the necessary information, and that's why in this morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, first posted at approximately 2:25 p.m. yesterday, Tuesday, that the Star Tribune came up with a rather interesting story, which it attempted to imply that Mr. Gore, or now interim, or still interim Superintendent Gore, had a relationship with the man who was actually designated and sent in to administrate the actions by the state of Massachusetts, the Commonwealth, as they are called out there, in taking over a school district in which they had already previously taken over two of the 11 schools in the district because of certainly malfeasance and nonfeasance in office, if you will. And some way or another, none of this ever came up during the summer of 2015 as the top six and then broke down to the final three, if you will, was announced by the district with the search firm in question taking a rather large check for the services rendered. It reminded me of the situation with Norwood Tweed, the now departed and disgraced former athletic director at the University of Minnesota, whose prize pupil, head basketball coach of the University of Minnesota's basketball team, is facing another disastrous year. The Gophers, just stepping aside there for a moment to remind us of how things work in our beloved Shangri-La, the Gopher basketball team now losing by double digits. When you start losing games by 25, 30, 30, 33 points, and et cetera, you know, either you have no personnel, wasted your scholarships, or you don't have a very talented coach. Of course, we said that in our column in this Minnesota Spokesman Recorder a couple years ago. People were unhappy with us when we said that, first of all, Tubby Smith should not have been fired, and that the person that had been selected, the son of a very well-known and successful basketball coach at the University of Louisville, who obviously will go into the Collegiate Basketball Hall of Fame, that it helped to have, you know, Daddy, and have Daddy's last name. But that's another story that we'll be taking a look at over the coming weeks, particularly as we take a look at Martin Luther King Jr. and the battle and struggle that he carried out before his life was taken. And take a look at February, Black History Month, to see how much of our history we can still find here in the state of Minnesota. So many people think that that the African American just got here, if you will, and since, I don't know, what, 1940, something like that. As we continue to point out as a historian, the presence of a son of the quote-unquote African, if you will, Bongo, a man whose parents were of Haitian nationality, and et cetera, who was actually the person that came into Minnesota. He did not discover it, by the way. The indigenous people, referred to as the Indians, were here thousands and thousands and thousands of years before surveyors and fur trappers came out from Canada or across the Ohio River and over the Alleghenies and through Ohio and Indiana and Wisconsin and found a place later named Minnesota. All of this is relevant to history because history did not serve folks well. Again, back to the headline in this morning's paper of a man who clearly, unfortunately for all concerned, because it is an embarrassment, it was not embarrassment, it is a continued embarrassment, if you will. School district has to act reasonably quick because the Minnesota Department of Education certainly is looking seriously at how the school district is operating. We're in the middle of the school year. This continues to be another period of trials and tribulations for the education of children, and particularly children of color, particularly Native American and African Americans, who are doing very poorly, if you will, in regards to achievement and et cetera, if you will. And so it is not considered to be conducive for a school district to be without a leader, and for a hot moment, the district left the impression that it had a new leader, evaporated, disintegrated, disappeared, and went up in smoke last night as the board actually caved in to its own previous and against its own previous position by voting unanimously to withdraw the offer from Sergio and attempted another series of quote-unquote maneuvers, if you will, parliamentary procedure, to offer the job to interim Superintendent Gore, which certainly had to be somewhat of an embarrassment. And, of course, we will, as we move into tonight's hour program, we will take a look at the events that happened that caused the board not to be able to execute its responsibility under color of law. There we are again. But back to the search for that moment, if you will. Now, we can well remember the discussions we started hearing as Bernadette Johnson, an African-American woman who was superintendent, and herself had a long history in the Minneapolis district, but had also been in Memphis, if you will, but returned as academic officer for the Minneapolis School District, and then was ultimately selected by pretty much the same board that within 2 years was asking her to step away from her leadership role and her responsibility. I don't know that we really ever got the full text of what it was that caused the fallout, but I'm already hearing statements being made that different board members can't stand interim Superintendent Gore, don't like him, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's the reason they voted against him. And so it must have been bittersweet. It must have been like taking hemlock or something like that last night for some of the board members, Gaglin comes to mind, and some others, to have to bite the poison pill, if you will, and vote against Sergio, and then were prepared to vote as, according to reliable insider sources who have been talking all day today, preparing to ask interim Superintendent Gore to take back the mantle of leadership of the district. Of course, when you talk in terms of great confusion and et cetera, this comes at a troubling time also, my friends, when violence is now finally being admitted to by the district following on the heels of a very exposed series of events in the St. Paul School District, which led to significant injuries, near death, in an incident at Central High School of a very respected teacher. We now have a principal at Harrison, as we first exclusively reported. Yes. We specifically were asked to make sure that we reported that last Wednesday night because the district had made a political decision that it wanted to suppress the violence going on both at Harrison and River Bend, two educational disciplinary facilities that seem to be out of control, if you will. In fact, if you were to talk to law enforcement officers, they would basically indicate to you the kind of calls that they're getting. But by the way, their calls aren't just limited to public school facilities. Charter schools are out of control, if you will. And there is, quote-unquote, a fever, if you know what I'm saying, in the land with respect to our young people. And it is something that we should have been spending our time as a community looking at, dealing with, and getting on top of actually a couple years ago. I'm afraid that we're beginning to see the fallout from the crack and drug culture of the last 20, 25 years that has gripped Black America that everyone wants to stay away from. But then that's a subject matter for another time, if you will. As we said, upon the return of our co-associate, Mr. Allen, we will be back taking phone calls and et cetera. Of course, our private line, which is known to some, is always open, our cell phone. If there is something that someone maybe wants to ask that we will repeat during the course of this program, we have agreed that we will attempt to do that. But last night certainly was a sad and dark moment for the 9-member board of the Board of Education of Special School District Number 1. And certainly, as we said earlier, the both politicians, oh yes, we do have politicians, contrary to what some people thought that would not happen here, that they could come and take over leadership and not be bothered with politics. Politics is in every fiber of everything that we do in this society. And for those that deny it, don't recognize it, ignore it, and et cetera, then they are doomed to failure, if you will, in some cases, extremely severe failure. And so last night, as we said just minutes ago, did not serve well the image, the legacy of the district. As we said in our column in the Spokesman Recorder on the 14th, that certainly the district did not handle this situation well. The search firm that they had hired, and I don't know how much money they have paid, they will ultimately have to disclose that in the course of disclosure over the next number of weeks. I assume that the taxpayers of this district will want to know just how much money went to waste, if you will, and why there was so little factual information until an entity in another state, and that would be, again, the Massachusetts Disabilities Law Center, had to alert us back here in the land of 10,000 lakes that we, quote-unquote, as a citizenry, that means all of us, my friends, were not totally up to speed and did not have all the information that we needed with regards to what was going on. You see, the process was so secretive in some regards, and then yet when the public reviews the meetings and et cetera, the so-called public examination of the candidates and et cetera, which really was controlled as many things are at that particular level in those particular domains, if you will. You know, you're restricted to a minute, 2 minutes of questions, you know. If you don't get all your stuff in that minute or 2 minutes, you will not be recognized again. I mean, you know, for those of you that have gone to these kinds of meetings, they really do not serve well the interest of vetting, if you will, of examining the information and the facts, though the board maintains that as elected officials, they have been expected and encouraged to examine in the full depths of what the statute, the law, and general practice, that's also key, general practice, general precedent, if you will, is expecting. And, of course, we know that does not happen, and so that leads us into a situation, a dark situation, as such as last night, where the board voted that I know that there couldn't have been a lot of a sense of belief by Sergio Paz as he walked out of that assembly room, and the chairperson of the board was saying, "We wish you the best." I mean, wow, you know, this is a man whose life has been turned upside down, if you will, and he is still facing consequences in Massachusetts, depending on what the district attorney there, that's the proper term there in that commonwealth, the district attorney decides to do with the investigation of negligence, abuse of young children, if you will, some as young as, well, 8, 9 years old, 4th through 6th grade, and et cetera. None of us should be comfortable that this information was not forforthcoming as early as the early summer of 2015. You would have thought that there were enough knowledgeable people on the board, if you will, and certainly you would have thought that the reporters who were trailing, if you will, and reviewing and writing about this search, once, particularly when we got down to the 6 finalists, if you will, definitely when we got to the final 3, that good reporters, competent reporters, honest reporters with non-agendas, if you will. A lot of agendas were at play here during the summer of 2015, but you would still think that a reporter worth their salt would, in fact, particularly given the access and et cetera that they had to the process, information being fed to them, deep back door, if you will, deep throat, if you will, and et cetera, that we would have certainly gotten a hint that there was something really wrong out in western Massachusetts in a small milling city, if you will, that had a lot of problems and also had a fairly large population of people of color. I noticed that folks went to great lengths to talk in terms that the population was heavily Puerto Rican, if you will. Also some Portuguese, if you will. And it was a city that had fallen on hard times, and that was reflected in, quote-unquote, the lack of educational attainment, achievement, and et cetera. We all were kind of waiting for a better background as we saw the 3 finalists presented, if you will, in the early fall of 2015. But for some reason, that did not happen. And so now there are rumors and speculation that there was a Latino, Hispanic faction of leaders, if you will, who indicated it was time for the blacks and the Asians and the Somalis and others to move aside, step aside, get out the way, a quote-unquote a new movement was in place. These were new times, if you will. And so you had that racial factor, if you will, in play. We will suspect that that will come back into play, though it will be interesting to see what the clout of the Latino-Hispanic community really is as it pertains to the Minneapolis scene over in the legislature and et cetera. By the way, one has to suspect that when the Minnesota legislature convenes in a very short period of time, that there will begin to be some displays of hostility. One hopes that the small delegation of legislators of color will be able to come together to not allow that to happen, but I don't have a lot of confidence that that will happen because they really have not been together on issues, particularly when one feels that the other group is at the mercy, quote-unquote, of the overview, if you will, the politics, if you will, the speculation, and et cetera, particularly by white-driven media, such as the powerful Star Tribune or the St. Paul Dispatch, the two largest daily papers in the state of Minnesota. If there's a feeling that folks want to enjoy watching, quote-unquote, the Browns and the Blacks and the Yellows and et cetera go at it, because in the meanwhile, we do not have the capabilities, because we don't have the resources to take a look at many other issues that are going on. In fact, it will be interesting to see in, what will it be, late June of this year, when the Department of Education comes out with the so-called traditional scores of the test and et cetera. And, of course, we get the same information we've been getting for the last decade, that African Americans and Native Americans are at the bottom of the pile. And there will be then a lot of speculation, a lot of discussion, if you will, a lot of meetings. But one thing about it is we love to meet. I'm not sure that anything is coming out of it, because we are being driven deeper into the quagmire of our positioning, if you will. When we say positioning, we mean that we are the most underemployed, unemployed, if you will. We are, by percentage, the greatest number in those incarcerated and et cetera. We, black Minnesotans, if you will, everyone talks in terms. In fact, the governor has been saying, as they've been negotiating for the last couple of weeks, about a special session to take a look at economic opportunity and et cetera, as we, as a journalist and a historian and an author, have said time and time and time again, using the narrative developed by one of the great civil rights activists of our times, who happened to come from this state, Nellie Stone Johnson, who always talked about no jobs, no education, no housing. We are doomed for failure, and it is quite clear that we have problems that are extremely severe as the African American community. And though I hate to say it, because, you know, there certainly will be criticism, I'm not concerned about the criticism, but we will have people indicating that we lost additional ground because we were not engaged, if you will, in what was really happening during the search period. We've not really been engaged as we should be with regards to the continued statistical data, which shows the sons and daughters of the African American, our children, continuing to lose their way, continuing to be pushed further and deeper into the quagmire, the quicksand of the achievement gap, attainment, and et cetera, if you will. And we will have a discussion probably by March of this year about the increase in violence, if you will, drug addiction, employment, and et cetera. In fact, it's amazing that we don't even talk in this community anymore about the fact that there are really no African Americans working on the largest public works project in the history of the state of Minnesota, the Vikings, now called U.S. Bank, in downtown Minneapolis. These are things that have gotten away from us, if you will. the whole issue of public safety and et cetera. The number of violent acts that are taking place that are affecting our community, being carried out sometimes black on black, other times black against others, other times others against blacks. I mean, it is frightening, and it goes back to the narrative advanced by Nellie Stone Johnson many, 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 many years ago, decades ago, in fact. You know, no education, no jobs, no housing, no future, if you will. And at some point, we are going to be asked by these young people, be they a 13-year-old girl who beats her principal to the ground, drives her to the floor by grabbing to her hair, attacking even male security personnel and etc., if we are not able to explain to them that we can't, as the adults, if you will, do a better job. And by the way, contrary to what is being said, and folks have said it to me, some of these youngsters are unfortunately out of control. Some of these youngsters, unfortunately, are mean-spirited, if you will. They have unfortunately come up in a culture in which that seems to be the order of the day. And there are many out there who are extremely frightened of their own children or the young people that walk the streets. And there's just something fundamentally wrong with that, dangerously wrong. And where some of that, well, much of that is to be addressed is in the field of education. And so that is, I now walk you back to our earlier comments about the amount of time and energy. See, contrary to what we like to pretend, the African-American community, in some places there's more of a significant volume of energy and et cetera. In other places, such as here in Minnesota, the volume of energy is not where it should be. In some cases, depending on the issue, it's non-existent, if you will, and that is dangerous. Because if we are involved in continuous failure, if you will, and then all of the problems that emerge out of that failure, all of the shaking of one's confidence, one's vision for excellence, if you will, one's vision for being able to be successful, being able to accomplish things, being able to provide for themselves and provide for their children and guarantee their future. When all of those things become so clouded that people become in such despair that they turn to artificial kinds of things, if you will, i.e. the drug problem in America, and definitely the drug problem in black America. All of it is a part of the educational process. And we need to ask ourselves tonight, how much did we lose when that vote was taken last night in the boardroom at 1250 West Broadway? How much more did we lose? How much of the clock went by us? And we will never be able to recapture those seconds and those minutes and those hours. That becomes extremely important with regards to people use this term, and we use it as a journalist, resolution and solutions, if you will. Do we have a clue? Now, that takes us to the show that was put on after the vote was taken. It is in this morning's paper, if you will. There is a picture on the inside of the paper, which shows a group of individuals representing the NAACP and Black Lives Matter who stormed the podium of the board, if you will, as the board attempted to open up parliamentary procedure, which they are required to do under the rules of Roberts, if you will, under the rules of governance, if you will. We've talked about that before on this program. We've had any calls on it. We certainly have talked about it in our columns, radio, TV programs, and et cetera, is that there's too much hypocrisy going on throughout community. On one hand, we say that we are soldiers in defense of justice, be it for young Mr. Clark, if you will, or be it for T.T. Franklin, if you will, or many, many, many others. But then on the other hand, we seem to have no problem demanding that, quote-unquote, the rights, the constitutional guarantees of others be stripped and taken away because we said that's the way it should be. To me, that's a certain level of immaturity, intellectual immaturity, spiritual immaturity, if you will, from people who want to be recognized as the esteemed leader, if you will, without question, without challenge, and et cetera. And so last night we saw another repeat of a performance and a show in which one was trying to figure out if folks are really concerned about the decision by the board to offer the superintendency to Mr. Gore, or if it was a part of continuing to get notoriety, if you will. Only the primetime players can answer that question, but at some point they need to be asked that question, because one of the things that happened last night at the board meeting is that the police were called. But the police, not feeling comfortable, and we warned about this as a longtime historian, that, you know, the lack of belief and respect and confidence and et cetera works both sides of the aisle. And so last night the police indicated they had no interest of getting involved in what was happening, if you will, as the board meeting was disrupted, as the board was not able to carry out its responsibility under color of law. We had used that earlier in this program, the importance of under color of law. As we said in our column, which people were somewhat critical, I was a little amazed that in a column in the Spokesman Recorder, the oldest black newspaper in the state of Minnesota, that we raised the question about the importance of nonviolence. And what better time to talk about the importance of nonviolence than the month that celebrates the life of a great champion of justice, nonviolence, due process, and et cetera, Martin Luther King Jr. And we have warned as a journalist and as a historian that we're on a dangerous curve, very dangerous curve, with regards to not respecting the rights of others and talking in terms of dismantling, quote-unquote, their right. And I continue to use this phrase because I'm seeing an even greater challenge, and that is the right of due process, the right to be accorded, quote-unquote, respect and opportunity. And we are in a very, very dangerous and difficult point in time as we move towards the national elections of 2016. People are amused, though it's not amusing, with Donald Trump. Now he's been joined by Cruz and others, and we are seeing a very well-calculated effort and undertaking by the extreme right in this country to raise the question that there are some who cannot be a part of the American dream. See, no one has the guts at this point to indicate and to speak about that and to demand a serious discussion, because there are folks out there that talk about there are those who, quote unquote, should not be guaranteed protection under the Constitution and color of law. See, that's one of the things nobody really wants to talk about. It maybe one of these months as we get closer into the hot, steamy debate and contest of the presidential election of 2016, that we will take a look at the Second Amendment, and we'll take a look at what the real fear is in this country about, quote-unquote, folks having their guns taken away. See, there's and the National Rifle Association, NRA, they know what the real code words are. If, you know, and again, this is part of education. If a decision and legislation could be put in place that that disarms Black America within one fell swoop tomorrow, that would be okay, as long as Billy Bob can keep his over and under and his 30-30 and his 30-06 and his assault rifles, his AR-15s and AR-16s and full automatics and et cetera. Now, we touched on that because that is a part of the undercurrent that is beginning to also take place with regards to how people are really kind of dismissing the challenge being faced by the African-American community with the continued failure of our future. That is our children, be they in kindergarten or first grade or attempting to graduate, if you will, and move on and et cetera. And, you know, no one is talking about what is happening. We are bringing more and more immigrants and migrants and et cetera into the United States who are vying for these jobs and et cetera. And meanwhile, we are not, quote unquote, crafting a strategy that allows the young people of the sons and daughters of the African to be able to compete in the Silicon Valley, if you will, to compete at the most significant level, the top level, if you will, of the demand for increased and enhanced technology that will continue to allow this country to be prosperous, though we, I think, all realize that the 1 and 2% factor is at play. So when one sees the continued failure of the youngest, if you will, of our species, as some like to say, we call them our children, our heirs, our future, and et cetera. But if one can continue to buy time, allow things to happen, continue to see us, as we said a couple of times on tonight's program, bury ourselves deeper and deeper in the quicksand of nullification and reversal, because, my friends, that is what is at play. We are being left out of the great American dream, but there are now those, and particularly those that support and rally behind the flag and the banner of people like Donald Trump and others, that there are some that are not deserving of the American dream, and that we, quote-unquote, they should not listen to the wailing, if you will, to the hollering, which is a short definition for the savages, if you will. Oh, I know people don't like when we African-Americans talk along these lines, but it is a factor of the kinds of discussion that is going on. It is what President Barack Obama, who gave his last State of the Union message last night, a man who had such great dreams and et cetera, to turn things around, to make it better for all Americans, but particularly drive up, quote unquote, the level of attainment and achievement of the sons and daughters of the African. It really hasn't happened. Professor Gates, in a piece on PBS over the last couple of nights and CNN and et cetera, has talked in terms that maybe too much has been lost. We hope not, because the African American continues to give birth to their heirs and their children, and we have millions and millions of young African Americans who have every right to be able, without obstruction, to enjoy the so-called American dream. So last night, as we watched the theatrics, if you will, as we move into the last 9 minutes of tonight's program, we tried to get a better understanding of what is the strategy. And we raised this question to all of us, if you will. What is the strategy? What solutions do we have in mind to protect against genocide, if you will, the sons and daughters of the African, the youngest and the most precious of that which we clearly must protect and embrace, our children, if you will? Will their future indicate that they will be educated in such a manner that they will be able to compete at the table of competition, if you will, that they will have every chance to raise their children and their children's children, and that we, as the sons and daughters of the African, have a future in this quote-unquote perceived great democracy? I'm not sure, because we're not having the kind of conversation, and certainly we're not winning. One of the things that we said in our column in the Spokesman Recorder, we said on this program, is that we must begin to hatch a strategy in which we become such an annoyance to those that are obstructionist against the future and against the existence of the sons and daughters of the African, that they ultimately see the importance of coming to the table of fairness, if you will, of diversity, if you will, of equality and opportunity, and et cetera. If not, then just as we said as a historian 20 years ago and 30 years ago that we'll be having the same discussion, we saw it coming a long time ago as a young Negro, quote-unquote, watching this country be turned upside down as we moved into the 1960s. But yet I was aware, as an example, as a historian, that there were many who came long, long, long before me who had uttered these same observations, these same expressions of concern that we were continuously being undermined as the sons and daughters of the African. We were being undermined, be it the Black Codes of 1870, 1871, 1872, the end of a Negro presence in the Congress of the United States in 1901, if you will, the segregation that was put in place after, quote-unquote, slavery was allegedly banished, if you will. Was this a continued pattern that every almost 20 years, definitely, we go through and go into as the sons and daughters of the African? Is this all the part of a Shakespearean play which turns into an African-American tragedy on the great stage of life? I don't know. But I know what my history tells me, and I know what it is that I have seen and observed. And I fear tonight, I am most concerned tonight for the future of the African-American community in the state of Minnesota, in the Twin Cities, and definitely as a part of the nurturing of the mind, the development of the mind, guaranteeing the mind that the opportunity will be there for that mind to continue to grow and to nourish and to provide the knowledge and wealth and understanding that is so important for our people to survive. You see, if we as Black Americans are not concerned and do not begin once again to set the agenda for our survival, you cannot expect those that, quote-unquote, have obstructed your every move, even long before the Emancipation Proclamation, if you will, and the Civil War of 1860 and all of that. But people who, since the day that we arrived on these shores, have seen us as unequals. Actually, as quiet as it's been kept, only those indigenous people that were here when we were brought ashore, primarily as slaves, as servants, and etc., those that are referred to as the Native Americans, have been only the only group that has really reached out, expressed concern, offered sanctuary, if you will, and attempted to provide and allow us to move amongst them as equals. Now we are faced with a situation that we've said 8 or 9 times in tonight's program. We are at a crossroads, my friends. Oh, we can chuck and jive and BS, try to pretend that we're doing good, you know. I mean, that things are going well for the upper 2% of the African American population. But if you don't do anything, for those of you that are intellectuals and et cetera, read Mein Kampf. But read some of the other books. Read books like Medical Apartheid, if you will. Specifically, read the book The Man Who Cried I Am. Get a feel on how easy it is to open the trap door that will lead you to fall towards extinction, if you will. We deserve better as the sons and daughters of the African. And part of that was on display last night in the General Assembly / boardroom of the Board of Education, the 9 members who sat there last night. They know that this is a much deeper issue that we are faced with. Finding someone who is committed to working towards and guaranteeing at least reasonable success in the importance of the education of children of color. We have mentioned it 5 or 6 times during tonight's program. Native Americans, the indigenous people who have been on this continent since time immemorial, at the bottom of the totem pole, and we and they are joined at the bottom of that barrel. We as adults who have experienced the life path of the battle for survival should be ashamed that we have become so silent. We've become impotent, if you will. It is like a search that is going on by those who have come to your farm or your ranch or your home to slay you, to take your life. That one feels that if one remains silent, and after destroying the village, these plunderers leave, that some way or another something will change. Nothing will change, my friend, except we will continue to mourn the continued demise of our people, the continued demise of our future, if you will. How we deal with that, it's up to us. For those of you that are listening and would say, this has nothing to do with me, those remind me of the famous last words of so many who went to their deaths during the course of the Holocaust, if you will. We really need to study our history, and we need to have visions of what our future looks like. Of course, there are some, far too many young people who now in conversations in closing actually point out and say that they see no future. There are some young people that say they don't expect to live past 20. There's something frightening about that, my friends. There's something deadly about that. Yes, a individual is out. This Minneapolis superintendent, and another one is being looked at to carry out God knows what. But the fact of the matter is the burden of survival, the burden of the right to exist, is upon the shoulders of us. We cannot ask anybody else to help us craft the grand plan for survival. If we fail to protect our future, our young, and et cetera, then we have allowed to befall upon us that which we have brought upon ourselves. That is frightening, but that is part of a message that Martin Luther King Jr. brought forward, Malcolm X brought forward, Paul Robeson brought forward, Helen Nellie Stone Johnson, Mary McLeod Bethune, and others. Well, we appreciate the opportunity to come to you this evening to talk a little bit about the future and the survival of the sons and daughters of the African. Continue to stay strong, and hopefully if you stay strong, you may be able to survive. On behalf of the Ron and Don program, good evening, and may God's hand continue to stay on your shoulder to protect you and your future that being your children. Good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.